My dawn visits of the commons had become the most ordinary of errands. Madam never woke early enough to note my absence, and the soldier wives were so grateful to avoid the chore, they never told. Corzin had grown terrible thin and was still feverish, but his leg had healed up, and he greeted me at the window every day. After I left the prison, I'd fetch the water and head back to Wall Street, passing by the Golden Hill Tavern in case Captain Morse needed me, which he never ever did. So when the captain signaled me from the tavern porch the next morning, I was surprised. I had not seen him for weeks, not since the news of the rebel victory at Trenton. "Good day, Giselle," he said with a sleepy smile. "How do you fare?"
"Good enough, sir," I said. "Is something amiss?"
He winced and pulled his coat tighter.
"Nothing grave. No news of battle or prisoner exchange."
I waited while he sought the words.
"I'm in need of a favor," he finally said. "It's of no worldly import, but it is a matter of honor for me."
"Sir?"
"I must repay a debt, Giselle. I wagered Captain William Farrar that the British would not dare hold this ridiculous birthday celebration. It's a slap in the face to the people who are starving."
"Yes, sir."
He frowned and kicked at a stone poking up from the half-frozen mud.
"But I'm proven wrong, aren't I? Thousands of pounds are being wasted, and so I owe my friend, Captain Farrar, a penny. A gentleman always pays his debts promptly, be they large or small."
I was confuddled. "And you want that I should..."
He threw up his hands in frustration.
"The British have confined all American soldiers to their lodging houses today."
"Why?"
"They fear we might mount an insurrection while they are dancing minuets and gorging on stuffed goose. They have a point. The ball would provide the perfect cover for a surprise attack if Washington were nearby. So I am prevented from making good on my bet to William, and he is prevented from coming round to collect his due. 'Tis a small matter of honor, to be sure, but when in reduced circumstances, these things take on greater weight, don't you think?"
Still confuddled, I nodded my head. "Yes, sir."
"Good. Then you'll do it."
"Do what?"
"Take the penny to William with my salutations. It will give him a good laugh. He lives on Chapel Street, a house with red shutters on the corner of Warren. Say you'll do it for me, Giselle, and the next penny I earn goes into your pocket, upon my word."
Madam would be wig-deep in preparation for the ball all day. The soldier wives would, too, for they belonged to the army of servants who would work at the birthday dinner. Lady Seymour required only a warm fire and occasional help with the teacup. A walk up to Warren Street on a sunny day such as this would be most welcome.
"Happy to help, Captain," I said.
The roar of cannon shook the kitchen just after midday and made me near jump out of my skin. I dropped the turnip I was peeling and it rolled across the floor.
"What was that?"
I asked, clutching the table. "Are we under attack?" Hannah laughed and used the poker to push the logs to the back of the hearth.
"No, you goose. That's the royal salute for Her Majesty."
Mary pressed the hot iron against the apron on the table.
"Do you figure they might need us early?"
"The major said 5 o'clock, Hannah said. "Gives us time to finish up here."
"Will you get to see the dancing?" I asked.
"Nah," Mary said. "They'll be too busy running us ragged setting up the dinner, but they've promised to feed us good." She picked up the apron and studied it for wrinkles.
"I wish my mother could see this, me, serving at a queen's birthday ball."
"Too bad your mother's on the other side of the globe with Her Majesty," Hannah said.
"They'll both be tragical late to the party," Mary giggled.
Madam sent a note to her friend Jane Drinkwater, who agreed to bring her collection of necklaces and the latest gossip to tea. The news caused Madam to send the soldier wives pawing through the attic for a gown she had not worn yet this year. Hannah sent me to fetch more water, which I did with great pleasure and a short detour. The houses on Warren Street were a mix. Some were modest, two or three were rather grand, with arches over the windows and fancy boot scrapers by the front door. The trees and fences in the neighborhood had all been cut down for firewood. It made the corner of Warren and Chapel look underdressed. I went round the back of the house with the red shutters, knocked on the door, and explained my errand to a maid who fetched Captain Farrar for me, a horse-faced man with an easy laugh.
"Good Captain Morse is indeed a gentleman," he said as I presented him with the coin. "And you're the girl who carries messages to his men in Bridewell."
"Yes, sir."
"My lads are locked up in the old sugar house," he said, his smile fading.
the one still alive. He stood there, caught up in silence and his own thoughts. I tried to think of a polite way to take my leave, but could not find the proper words. The breeze came from the south and carried a salt tang with it. Although snow lay about and everyone was wrapped deep in their clothing, the appearance of the clouds made a body know deep down that spring was stirring. "Yes, sir," I finally said, "begging pardon, but I must be on my way."
"Of course, of course,"
he said, his eyes still distant. I walked down the path to Warren Street and stopped when I heard him call me.
"Sal, wait there a moment."
I stood a while longer, watching the clouds and scolding myself for mixing in with the affairs of gentlemen and their honor. Several carriages containing bundled-up ladies and serious-looking officers passed along the street, pulled by shaggy-coated horses. Most folks took no more notice of me than they would a cartman selling oysters or a vagabond from Canvas Town. Just as I set my mind to leave, Captain Farrar came back out.
"Give this to Morse, please,"
he said as he handed me the note.
"He'll know what to do."
I studied the folded paper and made bold. "Another wager, sir?" Another carriage passed on the street, the horses clip-clopping slow. He shook his head, the laughter gone from his eyes.
"No, news from headquarters. Don't tarry with it."
He touched his fingertips to the brim of his cap. I bobbed a curtsy and took my leave, hurrying toward the tea water pump. I should have known I'd be pressed into more message carrying. These soldier types were forever scheming up one thing or another, and it put a girl like me in a rough spot. Not that they ever thought about that. I didn't ask to ferry messages across the city for some captain I didn't know. How was that connected to my deal with Dibden to treat Corps and proper? It wasn't, not one bit. The good captains Morse and Farrar would just have to wait till it suited me for this last message to be delivered. If I didn't get back soon, I'd be in for it. I pushed through the back door to the locked-in kitchen, still fussing about selfish captains who only thought of their own skins. When Corzin got out, he'd have a debt of honor the size of a whale to me. I'd make that boy. I set down the water buckets, removed my cloak, and hung it from a peg near the fire. I stood rubbing my hands together and warming them over the flames. As soon as I could move them, I'd boil up the water. The door from the front hall slammed open.
"There you are."
The words came at me like shards of glass. I turned. 'Twas Madame Lockton holding a small riding crop in her hand. "Ma'am?" She crossed the room and slashed the crop across my face. It hurt fierce, but I knew not to cry out.
"How dare you?" she spat.